This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, hello, hi, and welcome to another episode of The Emma Gunn Show. I'm so happy to have you with me, and I couldn't be happier, actually, to be bringing you this episode. No, it's an episode. Nothing's changed. It's an episode with the brilliant Hannah Martin, who is a pro makeup artist. You may know her from Instagram. You may know her from her column in Lizelle's Wellbeing magazine, her YouTube channel, or from her podcast, Life and Lipstick, which she co-hosts with Lisa Potter Dixon. I appeared on Life and Lipstick at the beginning of this year, and we did a bit of a cross pod. So the girls were also on this fine show. And we started talking, Hannah and I, about her career at Bobbi Brown Makeup as a pro artist. And it was definitely a conversation that we started and hadn't finished. And so what you're about to listen to in this episode is really the continuation of that conversation. But it really is important for me to say what a ray of sunshine Hannah is in anyone's life. I just have to be really honest about it. I've been having a really stressful couple of weeks, and we've been trying to make this happen, and I had to cancel on her once, and then I was being mucked around by someone else, and I thought I was going to be podcasting, and then I said, oh, I can't do it, and oh, actually now I can because I got cancelled on. You get the gist. And I said, look, I know it's the night before, but could you do tomorrow? And is it okay if I come to you? And we did a good old British thing of going, no, I'll come to you. It's so much bother. And when I arrived, she had made the most beautiful lunch. She just treated me so nicely. And like, she was such a good hostess. So even if there's no other content in this podcast, I just have to say Hannah Martin is a brilliant person to have as a friend, because she is now definitely a friend, because she's just lovely and kind and sweet, also hugely talented. And I do think her story of being with Bobbi Brown, the brand, and being very well known in the industry as a pro makeup artist, but she was with them for 12 years, to go out on her own, it's such a huge decision and such a huge step. And I really appreciate the fact she's been very open and candid with the highs and lows of that journey. And that's really what you're going to get in this episode. And we cover a lot of turf, including some random tangents. But hey, what would a relaxed chat with some pink fizz on a Tuesday lunchtime be without the odd tangent? And we could have talked for absolutely hours. So thank goodness that a nail appointment and a train time meant that we had to wrap it up. Otherwise, this would have been a 7-hour show. I really hope that you enjoy it. I think you can tell I enjoyed spending time with Hannah immensely, and I really learned a lot, and I felt very inspired by what she said about the decision and pushing things through, and how it really is about knowing what you want and just running towards that thing in a way that doesn't jeopardize the other parts of your life that are also important, which I think is a vital lesson to learn. So here she is, not making her debut because she's already been on, but I guarantee you she'll be back. It really is the wonderful, kind, generous, sweet, excellent hostess that is Hannah Martin on The Emma Gunn Show. You join us at the hilarity of spending a lunch hour, it's been more than an hour already, with the divine Hannah Martin. Hello.
Hiya, love. How are you doing?
I'm so good because I've been at your house for an hour and a half and you fed me and you've given me pink champagne.
I was trying to remember our conversation about your favourite tipple.
Aww.
I think you said champagne.
Oh, I do.
But then I couldn't remember if you said rosé. And I did that thing where I was like, I don't really have time to go back to the podcast and have a listen to find out what you said. So let's just go pink fizz and then we're kind of in the middle.
And we're talking about the time that I came on your podcast, Life and Lipstick.
Correct.
Co-hosted by Lisa Potter.
Yes.
You're so kind. It literally has been the nicest. I was like, I really need to see a friendly face this week. It's been a very tough work week. And we've had this in the diary back and forth.
Yeah.
And you said, are you sure you're okay to come to me? And I said, Hannah, it's what I need.
Yeah. And I wasn't sure if I believed you. I was like, is she being very British? And like, no, don't go out of your way. No, don't. So then I was like, fine, if she comes, I'll make it worth her while.
But what I loved is that both of us, it was about you either coming to my house or me coming to you. And we were both like, oh, it's out of your way. It's terribly far away. But it was the same distance. And then I was like, no, I really need it. I need a friendly face. I need a change of scenery. I need a challenge.
And she's come southeast. Great.
Oh, it's lovely.
It is lovely. It's lovely. We moved here, well, in the area kind of 12 years ago. Essentially because our friends were living in the area and we did the whole like, well, we're going to move to London, but we kind of don't want to just like jump on Benny and Claire's lives. Let's try and do our own thing. And we looked at flats in Tooting and kind of all over the place. And we were like, why are we doing this when we just really love Greenwich, Charlton, Blackheath? Like, so yeah, so we settled here and haven't looked back.
Well, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I was one of the many people who moved to London and landed. I always say landed because so many people land in Clapham.
I've got, yeah.
You just land.
We didn't land there because we couldn't afford it.
It's like Ellis Island. It's just, I'm going to move to London. Fine, Clapham. And I think it's just because, especially if you come from not London, you just think Clapham Junction, transport links.
Yeah, of course.
You just assume you can get places.
Yeah, of course. Stupidly, the error is that both our families are in the West Country. So we're on absolutely the wrong side of London to visit all our family. So we have to go either all the way east to west to get out on the M4 or we have to do the entire M25.
Hmm.
So that was erroneous, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I think you just know. It's like I definitely prefer being southwest.
Do you?
But actually, if I think about it, I've never spent enough time southeast to have really judged, but it's just that thing of just, no, I like this.
But isn't it interesting? Like, I even find sometimes if I'm going to a gig or a job and I head out on a train line, not southeast, I feel a bit...
Like you're in a different country.
Unsafe. Unsafe is probably the big word. Just kind of unsure, I suppose, or slightly uneasy because it's not familiar.
Yes, and it's a bit like... when you go on the train for the first time or a bus for the first time, you think you're going to do it wrong. I definitely get that. Like when I used to do lots of photo shoots for the magazine and they'd be like, right, you have to go up to Macclesfield or you have to go up to Manchester, you have to go up to what? And I'd be like, and you're just the kindness of taxi drivers.
Yeah.
You get to the station and be like, how do I get here, please? I can't afford a taxi, but which road should I walk down?
I definitely spent many years of my life actually in my old job following the blue dot on Google Maps. So I was in a different city every day. The only problem is I really struggle with map reading. Like I'm actually quite dyslexic, but I would find it really almost impossible to compute the image in front of me.
Are you like Joey?
In terms of direction, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would be that person kind of head down looking at their phone, kind of walking 50 yards up, turning around 50 yards back again, turning another 90 degrees, you know, and it would take me the longest time to kind of fathom.
I did that when I came out of the station to come to you.
Did
just
you?
Now. And then when I phoned you and I said, I've turned right, please know it's because I had previously turned left.
Oops, okay.
And the blue dot had gone in the wrong direction.
Oh no. I wonder what route the blue dot was going to take you.
Oh no, I hadn't set a route. I just knew where A was, where I was,
right,
and I knew where you
were.
So I just knew that it had to go that way.
Funny. My goodness, where were we without the blue dot? What did people, did you carry like a street atlas? Do you know what?
Yeah.
I know you did.
Yeah.
When we first moved to London in 2006, that's what we did. We had an A to Z.
I remember...
I'm nearly divorced.
But you're the navigator.
I was, and it was horrendous. I was like, why am I the navigator when I can't map read? And I get really car sick.
Ooh. I remember going to journalism college, mm-hmm. and literally, I need to stop saying literally, but I printed out, because I think it was MapQuest or something,
where it would do
street directions. Yeah. So I printed out on like 5 bits of A4 paper, which now I'd get pulled over by the police and fined for. But I printed out, it was like, at the end of this road, turn left. And I followed that the entire way to Brighton.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
From Kent. It's like an hour and 45 minute, 2 hour drive. And just on my wit the entire time.
Dude.
People talk about stress of social media, but the stress...
Driving without sat navs, flipping heck. When I, not long after I passed my test, I went to visit Simon, who's at uni in Durham, and I drove from Oxford to Durham with handwritten notes. Oh, hours, forever. Handwritten notes that Simon had written on A4 paper. So I was gripping them with my left hand on the steering wheel, right hand on the other, and I was just kind of watching and reading constantly. But yeah, what was it called? I want to say City Mapper, that's just my app.
What was it called?
MapQuest.
It was MapQuest. And I heard about that when I was in America, and I thought it was very newfangled.
Abso-flipping-lutely. How funny is that?
I don't know how we used to get around.
I think, well, just people used to know roads, didn't they? Like, yes. I'm always amazed when I stalk to someone and they're like, oh, you're going to Bath? Oh, great. So you'll do the whatever followed by the something, something. And I'm like, what? I do not know what you're talking to me about.
I have a problem.
How do you
that.
Know roads?
No, I know. It's like when you say to somebody, oh, I've got to get to such and such on the tube. And they're like, oh, well, you just switch at the Piccadilly and you do this. And you're like, you shouting station names at me isn't going to help me get there. Just like,
right. I feel like I could do that better, like the underground.
Yeah.
But kind of instinctively knowing what roads lead to where blows my tiny mind.
Well, that's the knowledge. That's what all the London cabbies do. That's why we must support black taxis in London.
I know, hilarious.
London.
So my dad came to visit a couple of years ago and was a bit worried about like transport things. I was like, don't worry, Dad, just get an Uber. And the 3 Ubers he took in London, none of them knew where he was going. And he just was so incensed. His fuse is rather short anyway, but he was so incensed by these guys like not knowing where they were going.
Yeah.
I won't advise him to do that again.
No. Black cab all the way.
All the way. I do love the chat cab, the black cabs.
They can talk you through it. They can talk you through, right, we're going through here now.
Yeah. I've got one guy up at North Greenwich who, whenever I get in the car, he's like, oh, you're the makeup artist. I'm like, yeah, mate. And we have like a nice like 10-minute chinwag on the way home.
Is that because you've got into his cab many a time with a whole bag
suitcases?
Of
yeah. And like, you've been on holiday? No.
When I started the podcast and I used to have, it was a much bigger kit and I used to have a little suitcase. I used to turn up at hotels often.
Yeah.
And it would be like, oh, I'm just going to be here for an hour. And then you'd realise... Not the thing to say as you're walking through a hotel reception. Just going to be here for an hour with my case.
Different gig, babe. Different gig.
Different gig. But speaking about knowing our way, knowing what road to take, leads us nicely into... Do you see what I did there?
I did there. Very clever. Very good. I never know if it's Segway or Sedgeway, which is the root thing. And no, enunciation. And which is the like motorised wheelie thing.
Isn't it the same? I thought it was all S-E-G-U-E. Segway.
Segway?
Yeah.
I'm sure 50% of the time I say Sedgway because I'm just not sure. Segway.
We will look this up afterwards because I think this is an important point to clarify. But when you came on the Emma Gunn show back in... Was that before Christmas?
No, just after Christmas, but not long after Christmas.
Yeah, for some reason I got my... Yeah, it was not too... It wasn't that long ago, in all fairness. We talked about the fact that you had been up Bobby Brown for many years. How many was it again?
12 years. A week shy of 12 years. 3 weeks shy of 12 years.
Wowzers, that's a long time. Mm. And I know a lot of people in the Facebook group for this podcast have requested you. I look at you, you're such a pro. You're like, I'm putting the water glass down.
I didn't quite do it properly.
No,
it's fine. I still had a clunk.
No, it's fine. Have asked about you coming on here because obviously people follow you on YouTube, they know your story. And I think when we started that conversation on the podcast, we talked about you leaving and about what it was like to leave the solid, stable world of being like really quite high up and important at Bobby Brown and going out on your own. And it's now been 6 months.
Mm.
And in the very extended conversation that we've had prior to this recording, where incidentally, listeners, Hannah has fed me a gorgeous goat cheese and red onion tart.
I didn't make it myself, unfortunately. Still yummy though, right?
God, it was delicious.
I'm going to learn how
and
to make
pink
that.
Fears, and the pink fear is the most crucial factor. You said that even since we last spoke, your thoughts and feelings have evolved and things have changed.
Yeah.
And I think what I would be really interesting to find out from you is, looking back on that decision, how you feel about it, and how things have really... Have you had days of panic? Have you had a plan? Have you made a plan?
For sure. So I still think it was the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, as time goes on, the more peace I feel that was the right thing to do. I definitely panic because not every day is a billable day. And that really concerns me sometimes. So if I go, like I would say, you know, March was a really busy month, but there wasn't a huge amount of stuff I could invoice in there. And that was really uncomfortable. But then suddenly this month, I'm sitting on lots of invoices that when they all come through, I'll be fine, you know. So there's definitely panic around that because PAYE is so easy in a way. But the freedom is so welcome. It's so refreshing. Managing my own time is incredible. Like it was quite tricky for many years to kind of relinquish control over my life to a brand and other people agreeing my diary, which absolutely is the way it was, but not having the autonomy to be able to say, well, actually, Bear's got a thing I'd really like to be at nursery, or I'd like to nip to the dentist, or whatever, all those things that were just kind of taken from your hands because your days were decided in advance by someone else and you just had to do. It's wonderful to have that sense of autonomy finally.
And I guess this keeps cropping up in conversation I'm having with my friends recently, and it's something Gretchen Rubin said, not on the podcast, but I've read all her books and she came on the podcast a few weeks ago, and she talks about when you decide that you've got to leave a job or that you want to move house or that you want to leave a relationship, it's probably six months after you should have done, because it takes a long time to say to yourself, actually, yes, I need to change my situation. And I think you have been in a very secure, high profile role. And I wonder whether you feel like, if you look back now, obviously it was a great thing, and I'm not disparaging Bobby Brown or the role that you had, but do you feel like if you look back, the roots that you had were too big for the pot, like 3 years ago? Like, do you think that you could already see that you were growing beyond and above?
Yes. Yeah. Like, it's uncomfortable to say yes, because... But yes, yeah. So I could see that. I really always wanted to make sure in my role that everything was being rooted back to the brand. And I remember a conversation in 2011 where someone was like, oh, we're going to make you famous. And I was like, no, I don't want to be. Like, I just want to do the best I can for the brand and for Bobby, because obviously, we're still really good friends to this day. And I remember someone from the US team being like, well, that's perfect. Someone who's so in it, so passionate, so driven, but for the goal to be raising the profile of Bobby Brown, the woman, and in turn, Bobby Brown Cosmetics. So that's, you know, I maintained that actually to the bitter end, but there were some things that happened in that final year that I was still with the company that made me realise and see that I could be okay without the brand.
I think that's a really interesting evolution to go through, because I think you are, because of the conversations that we've had, and I am one too, a people pleaser. And so when I've been aligned with a brand before, with a magazine, I put the magazine above and beyond everything. At some point, and some people are better at managing it than others, but I definitely experienced in my life that by putting a brand or work above everything else, at some point the deficit in the amount of time you've invested in you shows up as an issue.
And I definitely experienced that. And I think Simon used to always say, like, whoa, like, it will continue without you. Like, do you have to do that? And do you have to be still working on that at this hour or whatever? But I believed that my input was absolutely necessary. Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying that I was, I don't want to get the word wrong.
Not in an
indispensable,
arrogant way.
Not in an arrogant way. I just felt so committed to doing the very best that I could. But you know, the flip side of that is, I spent wedding anniversaries away. I spent, doing gigs while I was miscarrying and, being away from home with, bad diagnosis with my mum and stuff, and just being very much like, crumbs, I've just got to suck it up and keep going. And I'd say, I have quite a few regrets in life, but one of the key ones was, I remember saying when my mum was, she was terminally ill, she was nearing the end of her life, and just saying, guys, I really need my weekends. Like, I need to get to Gloucestershire at the weekend to see my mum. Like, she doesn't have long left. And the last Saturday she was alive, I was working in Cardiff. So I was away. I went from Cardiff to my parents, but I got there really late on the Saturday. I spent a chunk of Sunday with her, but then had to drive back to London ready for work on the Monday. And actually, when I got the call from my sister being like, you need to get home now, she's possibly going, I was on my way up to Edinburgh. And that really troubles my mind. I'm like, what did you not hear about what I needed? And what I needed was to be close to home because my mum's dying. And I suppose I allowed a bit of resentment to build up there when people were saying, oh, my diary's really unfavourable, I'm really tired. I'd be like, yes, I know. I've been there, I've done that. I sacrificed so much to do my job and deliver. So you don't need to tell me, like, I hear it. Don't think I'm in this position that I haven't worked for. I've grafted for it, and I've made a ton of sacrifice to get, to continue the trajectory to get to where I want to be.
It's a difficult one to reconcile, that one, that specific example.
Yeah, when I look back on it now, I just think, I wish I'd been stronger. And when I'd seen that in my diary, I wish I'd kicked back and said, I can't do that. But I, for some reason, didn't feel I could. So I just...
Have you made peace with it? Can you make peace with it?
I don't know if I can make peace with it. I don't know. Verbalising it now, I can feel I'm getting a bit hot. I'm getting a bit, sad. If I thought about it too much, my chin would go and I'd probably cry.
I'm watching you very carefully to avoid.
Right, yeah.
I don't want to push too hard.
I'm sad that I wasn't strong enough to push back.
Yeah.
Because I potentially could have had a Saturday and a Sunday with my mum.
But, yes.
And that's actually no one's fault, it's my fault. Because I wasn't I could have been more assertive in that situation. So there's that. I'm annoyed I wasn't more assertive. And then it fuels my frustration when at times I was made to feel like I was only in my role because I was potentially favoured or lucky or whatever, when actually, I grafted for it.
And it's really lovely to hear you say that you know that you grafted for it and you weren't lucky or favoured. That you got to where you are based on the work that you put in. Because I do think that when one is a people pleaser, it can be very easy to validate oneself by someone else's perception. But to hear you say, no, it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. I know why I got here and I know the work that I put in. I know the sacrifices. I do feel like that's step one. And that's definitely a muscle I had to an untrained muscle that I had to, like, it was a baby muscle that I had to train when I went freelance of, yes, you had a great role and now you're going out into the big unknown, but if you did it there, you can do it anywhere because you're the common denominator.
Right. So isn't it interesting that I very much felt that in my old role, and anyone who made me feel that that wasn't the case, I was very aware that that was more about them and less about me. I think when you take away the crutches of the brand and kind of essentially what you're known for, I suppose my biggest fear was that I'd left it too late and I'd stayed in a role that had pigeonholed me to kind of one skill set and kind of one thing. So that was kind of a key concern that I took with me when I left, was like, crumbs, I'm just Hannah Martin, Bobby Brown. Like, is it going to work? Just Hannah Martin, you know?
Dropping the magazine from my name. Sorry, I'm shifting my chair, listeners. Dropping the magazine from my name, because I used to be Emma From. It was never Emma Guns, Emma Gunnar Wardner, Emma G. I was always Emma From. Dropping that was a huge thing. That was like the earth suddenly becomes unstable under your feet.
We had a really funny dinner right where we're sitting now with some friends of ours who were both in medicine. So he's an anaesthetist, she's a GP, but it's gone on to Condiment too. Oh gosh, how can I forget? One of the big companies in the city. And for fun, they were putting all the letters they got after their name. And of course, you know, even 40-year-old doctors are still doing exams and whatever. And kind of on their notes, it was kind of going into like the third line of letters. And I was like, I've got BB Pro. but I was really, like, it really, like, you know, I realised quite, well, early on in my degree, but I made the decision quite late on in my degree that I wasn't going to ever pursue what I was doing and that I was going to focus on makeup. So I didn't do my dissertation. I didn't do my management module.
What was your degree?
Nursing, obviously. So I didn't get a degree. I got a diploma of higher education. I didn't even go to my graduation. Like, it was such a, as soon as I finished my hours, that was it. Like, the door was firmly closed. But the fact that I don't have, I was going to say BHS. Flip neck. What, BSc?
BSc, BAons.
Yeah, whatever it is after, you know.
It's so long ago.
Don't even have that. So yeah,
20
weird.
20 years ago this year that I graduated, and that is an uncomfortable sentence to speak.
Crazy.
20 years.
20 years sounds like a very, very long time.
It is. It is. But when you think about what one can cram into it. But in terms of the identity, do you feel like 6 months in you can say that things are falling into place, or that, because you talked about being pigeonholed, and I'm interested if you are known for a certain type of makeup. Obviously your credits go against some really high profile events which are a certain look. I'm wondering if you thought, right, I'm going to come out and I'm going to do a rainbow and sparkle shoot just to shock everyone. If you just wanted to do something completely different and take a total left turn.
So, yes and no. So, one of the first gigs that I did solo was a campaign for Space NK. And it was great because it played kind of my makeup style and whatever. But at one point, the direction was a bit of, you know, a bit more of a graphic eye. And it sent me into a bit of a blind panic because I was like, oh gosh, if people know I've done it, is it going to translate? Are they going to be able to understand what I was going for? Are they just going to think it's really messy when actually it's meant to be like an artsy kind of splosh? Like, And I really got my knickers in a twist about it. But it's only recently that I've started doing, I've just done some test shoots with my friend Max and we've done some really wonderful and weird out there artsy stuff. And it felt really fun just to experiment and play. But I didn't want to launch into that immediately because I didn't want to discredit my history or my past. And I really like the makeup that I'm known for. I'm glad that I'm known for like beautiful, hopefully, she says, like no, beautiful beauty makeup. Yeah, like I'm pleased that that's kind of what I'm known for. And, you know, when people say like, gosh, why do you still do weddings? Actually, I kind of love creating beautiful makeup. Like, it makes me feel great. And I still enjoy, you know, yes, it's a stressful environment, but I still enjoy like all the beautiful things that come with weddings, you know, the shoes, the dress, the diamonds, whatever.
There's nothing like it. I mean, I've only done wedding makeup a couple of times, but I've been on lots of shoots. But there's nothing, it's a completely different atmosphere that morning when you do that makeup.
But it's really fun, you know, to use your term phrase, to kind of exercise the muscle of, you know, the more creative side that I maybe haven't indulged in recent years. So that's really fun. It's fun to have the freedom to do that. And I don't know if I could be saying this prematurely, but I'm sure they won't mind. I'm really excited that Leda at Delamar Academy has invited me to come and participate in some of their courses over the next 6 months. And it's going to be amazing. You know, I'm going to touch on prosthetics. I'm going to do some of their fashion courses. I'm going to do TV makeup and period makeup, and I can't wait. Like, there is like, what an awesome opportunity to learn and challenge myself, and I'm really excited.
It is exciting, and I think it's nice to hear somebody who took a leap, because by Jiminy, was it a leap?
Flipnick, yeah. I actually never thought I would leave.
Really?
I thought I could stay in it for the long haul. You know, and it, stupidly, I was quite attached to the idea of a title. I wanted a directorship, whether that was in the UK team, whether it was a global position. I built that up to be quite a thing in my head. You know, when I went on maternity leave this time round, I thought I was only going to be gone a couple of weeks. Like, I didn't think that was the start of the end, that's for sure.
When you go out into the world now and you work, because I definitely experienced this, so I'm curious if you experience the same thing. When you are Emma From or Hannah From, and then you go out and you're just Hannah, I wonder whether people's perceptions or how much, or the things that the industry have said to you, because obviously you've hit the ground running, you've got life and lipstick, you're out and about, you're doing all these events. And I wonder whether that's really helped bolster you in terms of reassessing where you fit in.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've been so much busier than I ever anticipated. I think I thought I'd kind of finish my time with the brand and then have a couple of months off and then kind of start 2019 afresh. But actually, you know, I was inundated with messages and emails kind of the day I announced I was leaving. I told you I had like a FaceTime interview with Marcia Kilgore 3 days later. So it was kind of like boom, go.
Yeah.
From that moment, which I hadn't quite anticipated, but it was really encouraging. I was like, this is the best outcome I could have hoped for. And you know, we were at a dinner together last week, and I honestly sat in the room being like, oh flip, what am I doing here, coupled with oh my goodness, I'm here. And that was quite astonishing for me, really.
Actually, that's made me really nostalgic, because I had, I totally, and I feel really bad now that I didn't squeeze your arm and realise you would have been thinking that, because I had a very similar thing after going freelance and being invited to something for the first time, not as somebody from a magazine, and thinking, I think I'm here because they think I could add value to this story or this product or this brand.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and that blows my tiny mind. Yeah. But it's a weird thing to get used to. In this day and age. So I've been trying to explain to Simon, it's like I'm getting better at going to parties on my own. So it's very rare that you'd ever accept an invitation to a party where you didn't know anyone.
Yep.
Whereas I'm having to just kind of suck it up and be like, absolutely, I would love to. And because genuinely, the events I'm going to, of course I want to be there. But that fear as you step into a room full of people that either you don't know or only know you in one context... is quite disarming. And actually, it was just unfortunate that at one event recently, I bumped into a journalist who I was really friendly with from my old role. And her first and only comment was like, what on earth are you doing here? And I was like,
oh, no.
Morning.
Oh no.
And then that was swiftly followed by someone touching me on the arm being like, oh, if I was wearing that top, I'd have terrible sweat patches. So I just, do you know what? I just embraced it. And I was like, ha, do you know what? I do. This is awkward. And they've got no hand dryers in the toilet. Ha.
In that situation, I'd leave and go to the cinema.
But do you know what I mean? Like, but I knew it wasn't coming from that particular person. It wasn't coming from a bad place. But I was like, I've got two options here. Mm. I can either take this really to heart, cry and go home, mm-hmm. or I can laugh it off, suck it up and just sit at that table and take my place. Mm. And I was surprised that I was able to do that.
I'm interested that you're surprised because you've been in so many situations just, and the only difference being a job title where you wouldn't have even thought about it.
Yeah, interesting.
So I think it just goes to show that a lot of the skills that you learned are benefiting you now.
And goodness, I'm thankful. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For however I felt when the end eventually came, ultimately, I am so thankful.
And so just for listeners, because I know that you've got a huge fan base in the Emma Gunn Show listeners. So how are you dividing your time? Like, where can people find you right now? Because you've got Life and Lipstick.
Yeah, so Life and Lipstick, the podcast that I co-host with Lisa Potter Dixon, which is a lot of fun. And yeah, so we're just in the series, in the process of making series two.
That's exciting.
Yeah, and it should be a corker.
It's going to have to do a lot to beat series one featuring.
Featuring Emma Gunns. Hashtag what a funny evening that was.
Hashtag a star is born again.
No, I can't even do you justice. Your singing is
phenomenal. We've just
been
sitting, listeners, we were sitting in Hannah's house and that song came on the radio when we were having lunch and we both stopped and did the we shan't do it now.
Oh, I love Gaga. I love Bradley Cooper.
I do too.
I love the film.
I do too.
Yeah.
I went down a Google hole on Saturday night.
Did you?
Looking at YouTube videos of Chris Evans, the actor, not the radio DJ.
Oh, it's going to be like, interesting, why?
I just think, he just seems like a really nice person.
So remind me who Chris Evans is, what? Why are you laughing?
Well, because it's just so daft. He just seems like a really nice person, but he's Captain America, so he's also incredibly
hot,
incredibly nice to look at. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah,
but he
yeah.
seems really awesome too. And he's from Boston, and I've never met someone from Boston I didn't like.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I've been to Boston once, to the airport, for a couple of hours.
Fascinating.
It really wasn't fascinating, but in my head I was like, great, I'm in Boston.
Boston. Oh my goodness.
Stuck on an airplane.
On one of your many travels. So yes, so you've got the podcast and then you've got YouTube.
Correct.
And Instagram.
Yeah.
So the point I'm trying to get towards is obviously you're still creating a huge amount of content. You're still putting yourself out there and you're still very much doing what you were doing before, but in a way where you were actually building the brand Hannah Martin, right?
Yeah. Yeah, which is funny because every now and again I'll get someone pop up and be like, oh my goodness, you're not with Bobby Brown anymore. Or I miss your Bobby Brown videos. And it's interesting because I still use Bobby Brown cosmetics. Of course I do. And I've still got products that I absolutely love and adore. Mm. I suppose it's just that I'm using everything else now as well.
Yeah.
And you know, I suppose that was something that kind of didn't marry well with me before, was that I felt like I couldn't be honest about what I was loving because there was so much I couldn't share.
Yeah.
So being able to share the things that I'm loving and enjoying is fun. It's so exciting.
But there's muscle memory. I used to say about leaving the magazine, it's like, you know, the scene in Shawshank Redemption. It's a bit of a stretch, listeners, but go with me because it's a bit extreme. But you know the bit in Shawshank Redemption where Morgan Freeman's character, Red, can't go to the loo unless someone gives him permission?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I used to feel a bit like that.
Okay.
But I can't do anything unless I've had it signed off, unless like the commission form has been signed by several people. So when I went freelance and I would start doing things, I would be in my home office and I'd sort of look over my shoulder at nobody because there was no one there, thinking, can someone just give me permission to do this, please?
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And because giving permission to myself felt wrong.
Yeah. I completely understand what you're saying. And entering stuff that hasn't had, you know, a chain of other people sign off beforehand.
Yeah.
There's so much security in that because you're kind of like, well, they all think it's a good idea and they've worked out the schematics and I'm just going to be the person who delivers or whatever. It's quite interesting now being the doing all the rest of it as well.
Mm. What do you think, just in the 6 months, you are discovering about your skills and abilities that perhaps you hadn't appreciated before?
Do you know what? Legitimate was the first thing that came to mind. Mm. Like, I can do this.
Mm.
And I do have a skill set that's quite broad. And it's marketable and it's usable. And I can.
Mm.
Not to say that I was meant to feel like I couldn't. I don't want to do them a disservice in any way. But I suppose it was a fear that had grown in me. Would I be able to do this on my own?
Mm. Has there been an element of surprise that actually you can?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Or do you think on some level you were like, no, Annie, you've got this?
I felt confident in my role at Bobbi Brown Cosmetics. It made so much sense. I was like, it's such a good brand fit. I've grown up through the brand. Like, my story's so authentic because I did used to work for the woman herself. We did legitimately have a friendship and a working relationship, blah, blah, blah. So I felt there was real authenticity to it. I suppose once Bobbi left the brand, that's when possibly it started to feel a bit like, well, I was kind of happy to flog myself when I was doing it for someone who I so admired.
Yeah.
But when I'm doing it to kind of, to line someone else's pocket, why am I doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I putting it ahead of everything else? And, you know, I didn't want to, especially with my daughter now, like I wanted to ensure that we had a really tight bond and, you know, had a bit of postnatal depression with Bear. It was also quite soon after my mum had died. So I don't feel like I prioritized necessarily the bonding with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel like, just sadly, that I missed quite a lot of stuff with his earlier years, you know.
Mm.
And I hated meeting people at the school gates when he started school with mums being like, oh my gosh, Bear was at that nursery, but we're at that nursery. I've never seen you before. And that really stung a bit. I was like, yeah, sorry. You know, I've not been very present, you know.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to make that mistake again.
Yeah. And again, making peace with that by just putting it, not right, but just by doing it differently next time the opportunity presented itself.
Yeah.
I'm not regretting it. How do you feel about the fact that Bobby's copied you and started a podcast?
Oh my God. I love her. And I love that she's a really straight talker and she doesn't sugarcoat a thing. And no, all props to her.
She just had, the reason I was, because she's just had Mally Roncal on, who I absolutely adore.
Mally, Beyonce's ex. Old makeup artist.
Mally came on this podcast towards the end of last year.
Okay.
And she'd just flown in she was doing QVC. So we like found a back room at QVC somewhere.
Great.
And she was exhausted. I was really tired and exhausted and a bit emotional.
Were you cry-tired?
I was cry-tired.
I've stolen that from you last met you. Because you know what? That day I was cry-tired. And I had cried before you came to the studio. I was like, I cried. Yeah, totally. So as soon as you said that, I was like,
I found my people. And I found my new word.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I was a bit cry-tired with Mally and I think she was a bit cry-tired. And I really wanted to speak to her because I really dig all her content. I think she's a really brilliant makeup artist. Mm. I really love what she stands for and I love her products. And I going in there, I was like, oh, you're going in with such bad energy, Em. You're going in with such bad energy.
Mm.
And you know when someone walks into a room and all of a sudden it's just like, the lights come on.
Yeah, you had that with her.
It's amazing. And so I know that, and she just did Bobby's podcast because she was talking about it on social, like, oh my God, this is a dream.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I saw that Mally then commented on something Bobby posted and it was like, move out the way, bitches, or something really funny. And yeah, it was lovely.
I know, she's hilarious and she does really good lives with her little girls.
Oh, sweet. I've never seen.
Oh, yeah. Her girls are bloody gorgeous. Oh,
I can only imagine.
They're absolutely stunning. They're just written. She was getting her makeup done by, I think it was Vivian the other day, and it was just so cute.
Sweet.
So Bobby started a podcast, which all props to her. Do you think you'll go on it?
I'd love to. Well, actually, we're hoping to go out to record with her. Yes.
Series 2 preview, sneak peek. How exciting.
Yeah, really excited. Because she'll be such good value.
Oh, she'll be amazing value.
Yeah.
This is going to shock you and listeners.
What?
I've never met her.
Really? How on earth did that happen?
Because I wasn't top tier press when she used to do events. So I never used to get invited.
That's crazy.
I mean, I used to get all the products. Please don't feel sorry for me. But I never actually had.
I'm so surprised you never had FaceTime with
Ever met Bobby Brown.
Gosh.
And I threw my toys out of the pram about it once. I really did. I was like, look, there's nothing we can do about it now. But next time Bobby's in London, I'd really like to come along, please.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it will happen one day.
Oh, I'm going to make it happen, babe.
Yeah, she'll come on this podcast, I'm sure. I would really love
to happen. Oh my gosh, that's so genius.
It'd be amazing.
Yes.
I know we touched on this last time you came on the podcast, but I really do want to just unpick this a little bit because Bobby's somebody that I've admired for years. And I feel like Bobby Brown is a name that I have known. It's like, I feel like I was born knowing McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Disney and Bobby Brown.
That's awesome.
You know, just names.
Yeah.
You don't ever remember where you learned them.
They just knew of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you have, as you said, a friendship with her, but you must, I wonder what it's like to learn from somebody and to just be in that stratosphere with someone like Bobby and just see how she navigates the world, because she's an incredible businesswoman as well as a really superb creative.
Mm.
And like, I wonder what, if you could sum it up, what you learned from her.
Mm.
And what the most valuable lessons are that you learned from being in such close proximity to someone like Bobby?
I think, well, I endeavour to learn it. What I admired was her kind of, her give it a go attitude. Give it a go.
Mm.
And if it doesn't work, that's okay. But keep going. Try something else. Try something new. Her, you can't ignore her emphasis on health.
Mm-hmm.
And well-being.
Really?
And yeah, like it would permeate everything we did. So if ever we were over with her for what we used to call boot camp, it was always, you know, the food was dire, but it was great for your digestion.
Oh,
you know, it didn't taste great, but it was super clean, super healthy. There'd always be moments of meditation and yoga and all of that message, which was, you know, put into schedules that were like kind of, you're leaving at 6:30 in the morning and you're not done till 11:30 at night, kind of intense days. But it's funny because I think that we can often so forget that. And I remember her last visit to London, we'd been working with her all week and then we were going off to do Bride's the Show. And then at one point in our day, she was like, what, you're doing the event tonight? We were like, oh yeah. She's like, make sure at some point you get outside in the fresh air and go for a walk.
Mm.
And it's those little things that, like, I do that now. Like, there'll be days when I'm at home and, you know, one thing I haven't worked out quite yet is kind of my scheduling. And I'll realise I've, like, worked back to back for 2 weeks and I haven't had a single moment for admin. And I'll be kind of, you know, in that head ache, sore eyes. Gosh, I haven't looked up from my computer screens for, like, 4 hours. Which, you know, it's not that intense, but when you're playing catch up for 2 weeks worth of admin you haven't looked at. And I'll be like, I just need 5 minutes of fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
And I might leave the front door and just walk the block.
Yeah.
And come back. And it's just that moment. Bobby was always very much like, it's time now to reset. And that's something, probably the key thing I've learned from her is just to press that reset button. And sometimes it means being quite firm with Simon. If he's like, great, so tonight we're going to do X, Y, Z, and Z. And I'm like, no, I need a moment to reset. I'm like, it's been such a day. So yeah, let's look into my PayPal account and get that sorted. Let's double check that invoice and then I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing any more work conversation or life admin. I just need a moment of either chat or mindless TV just to reset.
Mm. I don't know if you find this, but I find writing the to-do list is so vital.
My friend, I can't live without lists. I've written one this morning.
I never used to do them.
I can't bear the to-do soup in my head. And it just...
Stealing it.
Do you know what I mean? And then it's like in the blender going around and you haven't got really a handle of any of it.
Mm.
And that living under that panic is just so paralysing.
Yeah.
Put it on a piece of paper and you're like... tick. And it is life-changing, isn't it?
If you put the easy things at the top of the list too, so that by 9 o'clock you've ticked off three
Stop
things, you're like,
it.
I can do anything.
Yes.
Even if it's just put away the laundry.
Done.
If you tick it off across the line through it.
I saw a thing on Instagram the other day that was like, laundry takes 2 hours to wash, 1 hour to dry, 5 to 7 working days to put away. And I was like, this is my life. I mean, you've probably seen it today. There are little piles of laundry all over the place.
The thing I enjoyed the most is that when you had the box to put in the recycling, you just took a bowling pose and just... slung it up the hallway towards the front door.
Correct.
Just so, because it'll be on your way out. I know exactly what you're thinking, this unconscious kind of...
I suppose that is quite weird to be chucking food boxes across the floor.
I didn't know if I was supposed to join in. I nearly lost the...
You should have done. Find whatever you can. Plastic, cardboard.
Threw the champagne bottle down the hallway.
I mean, do it. But yeah, no, that's funny. And, you know, sometimes it's a bit of a game, like lobbing a dirty nappy down the corridor. Can I get it to the front door? Oh, nearly. What's Mary Poppins? In every job that's to be done, there is an element of fun.
You've got to
find the fun in it, haven't you?
You have to find the fun in it. But I just think, I know a lot of listeners... talk about side hustles and about whether to take that leap. And I know that this isn't about you taking a leap with a side hustle. This is about you coming into your own in your own...
Originally, it was a side hustle. Makeup was just my hobby.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it absolutely was a side hustle.
When did Initially. It transition? When did it become... And did you know?
Did I...
Like, it was your side hustle... But when you started putting more time into it, was it nursing and the side hustle of makeup?
Correct.
So
yeah.
Was there a point where it was like nursing's 80%, makeup's 20%, now nursing's 50% and makeup's 50%?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The balance shifted. And it was a confidence thing. And I got there with the help of a therapist at uni because I was so miserable. And I took a term off, actually. It's funny, isn't it? The things you kind of write out of your history book. But I took a term off and I was, just trying to find myself again and had, you know, just saw the uni counsellor and it was so helpful. Like, I wasn't really able to verbalise before why I was so miserable, but I was miserable because I hated what I was doing. And it was really like, my creativity was completely stunted and it was horrendous. Horrendous to my... sense of self and my spirituality. Like, I was just, it was awful.
Do you remember how the counsellor shifted the way you were thinking so you could see that for yourself?
I just remember her. I wish I could trace her. I'd love to be able to be like, look, I'm doing it. Oh my gosh. And she said to me, you know, what do you want to do? And what I said back to her was, what I want to do is I want to go to London College of Fashion and study theatrical makeup. And she was like, then do that.
Mm.
And I was a bit like, I couldn't possibly, and I didn't. But the fact that she was like, but you can, why don't you? Because in my head, I think I was panicking that my future was now this career path.
Mm-hmm.
That made me intensely miserable.
Mm.
And I've got myself into this mess and how I can't get out of it. And I think I thought I couldn't get out of it because I thought I couldn't let my parents down. Mm-hmm. And
it costs money.
Money, risk factor. Mm-hmm. And I'd have to start from the bottom. Whereas, you know, with nursing, I was going into a guaranteed income and a guaranteed kind of vocation and lifestyle. And there was a huge risk that makeup wouldn't work potentially. So yeah, that was kind of the key things kind of holding me back.
I'm curious then if when you moved away from nursing to makeup, whether it felt like work or whether, because I think there's this myth that if you do your side hustle, if you do your passion, you know, if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life or something. I don't subscribe to that, but I do think there's a different... It's a bit like, you know, I was going to say the walls have been greased. Where do I live? You know what I mean? You know, like everything's smoother, everything's easier if you're pursuing something that's true to you as opposed to...
Yeah. So I remember writing a piece for Bobbi Brown as part of a global roundtable about product development and stuff. And I... just, I remember checking the word count on the computer and I was up at something like, something bonkers, like 8,500 words. And I was like,
yikes.
I was like, what is happening to me? Like at uni, I'd have a 3,000 word count and, you know, 800 words in, I was done.
Yes.
I was like, how do I fluff this up? Like, it used to cause me such great stress and anxiety because they're just, it wasn't
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Whereas suddenly I'm writing about a subject matter that I love and I'm passionate about. And like, someone reel me in because, you know, there's kind of no end to this. And that was amazing. I remember being like, this is, you know, there are people at uni who had this same feeling writing about their degree.
Yeah.
I just didn't have that. So this is what it feels like to be working in something that you absolutely love. I'm trying to encourage my sister to work in the sphere of life that she is most passionate about because I want her to know what this feels like.
Mm.
I'm not saying she needs a job. I'm just saying that in her...
Yeah. It's like... I really can't say it because I'm speaking about someone else's life, but there's someone I'm incredibly close to who I believe is incredibly talented and could do unbelievably amazing things if they just took that step outside of what they're doing. But fundamentally, they've chosen security and safe, which is also completely fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've got this thing in my brain where I see so much potential in that person and I see so much magic in that person that I can't help but see unfulfilled potential. And that's really hard. And I obviously don't vocalize it to them because that's not fair.
Mm.
But if they ever took that leap, I don't just have confidence they'll be fine. I know they'll be absolutely fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's tough because... I've gone freelance. I started this podcast out of nothing and all of it was a risk and there's no guarantee.
No. Flipping it, aren't you pleased you did it?
Yeah, but I mean...
Look at you. Look at you.
Thank you. But there have been times, I've been freelance 7 years this year and there have been times when it has been like, right, you're going to have to sell the car.
Dude.
The car's a luxury. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, you don't, you know, it's been, and it's not like, you know, some fancy car or anything. It's a lovely car, gets me from A to B. But it's just like, right, there have been months, oh God, I'm going to really go down the whatever here. But there have been times when it's been really like, what is next month going to look like?
Mm-hmm.
And so I never want to say, oh yeah, it's easy, it's great. But when I see someone who I just think, well, you've got all the talent, you've literally got everything.
Mm.
And I certainly didn't have that.
Mm.
But so, which brings me to another question I'm really interested to ask people, which is about, because I've been asked this recently and it sort of stumps me, but equally it generates a lot of thoughts and feelings and emotions, which is, what would you go back and tell yourself based on what you know now, 6 months in? Is there something you would tell Hannah 6 months ago at the point of leaving? Or is there something you'd tell Hannah at the point of finally making that decision that you wish you had known?
Just that you're gonna be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, that you're... 12 years of dedication hasn't been in vain. It's not only valuable in that setting. Yeah. Yeah, because I had very little confidence in that.
Mm.
And I worried that people were only interested in working with me because of the brand I worked for.
Mm.
And it took Sally Hughes saying to me in that summer, Hannah, I've booked you in spite of Bobby Brown. And I was like, ah. It was the first time that someone had vocalized that they had booked me rather than the Bobby Brown Pro title thing. And it was really like kind of mind blowing, actually.
Sally's good at providing those sorts of moments for people because she speaks with such clarity.
And no fluff.
No fluff.
Whatsoever.
No.
So in no way did it feel like it was an over smushy compliment at all. It was just kind of like a throwaway fact.
Yes, that's what she has. Because if she says something, you're like, oh, she's not playing.
Yeah.
Like, there's no fluff. And there is a lot in the beauty industry. There is a lot of fluff and nonsense. Yeah. I would say that. I'm very comfortable saying that. Yeah. And you definitely don't get that from Sally, because she's just very straight down the line. She's written this book about the Queen.
Yeah, The Colours of the Queen.
Our Rainbow Queen.
Our Rainbow Queen. Oh, my gosh.
And I was reading it the other day. She very kindly sent me a preview copy. And I was reading about what she likes about the Queen. And I said this to her at the dinner the other night. I think I might have leaned across you to say it. I said, you do realise that you're the Queen. The way that you act, the way that you... She's very Queen-like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No nonsense, very professional, very direct.
Yeah.
Very safe hands.
Yeah.
Like, I completely... Anyway, I just thought it was really funny.
I've just got a picture now of, you know...
What, Sally in like a tone with a hand?
You know when often when the Queen shakes your hand, there are those memes where she shakes it and like
pushes it back at you.
Away.
Never,
as in to be like, thank you and
thank
you
and goodbye. I've never seen.
I love her. Just gonna say,
I
such a royalist.
Are you?
Yeah.
I was coming back from somewhere once. Great story. and it was. I was driving the Epsom, which is crucial.
Race course?
The race course. And I was on this dual carriageway and I was in the outside lane. Readers, this gets better. Listeners, this gets better. And the traffic wasn't moving. And I was like, oh, for goodness sake. It's like, what on earth is going on? And then I thought, well, my lanes are completely jam-packed. And the other side of the road, there's no car whatsoever. And then all of a sudden, I'm just there in my car, the one that I nearly sold, just like leaning, looking bored out of my driver's window, looking at the other lane. And this car just pulls up next to me, so very slowly goes past, and it's the Queen and Prince Philip. So I just went,
not what you're expecting.
No, but I was delighted.
Yeah, of course, as you would be. Stop it.
And it all happened in such a blink of an eye.
Oh. What fun.
Have you ever stood out in the street to wave flags at her or anything?
No. No, but I've seen her on a few occasions and it's been great fun each time.
What? I think we need to park that, don't we? Because I don't think are you able to say any more?
No, probably not.
Great.
But there have been some, you know, wonderful Queenie moments. Love her.
Well, 12 years and as we've talked about, obviously people know you from Bobby Brown, but obviously you're as we've established during this conversation, you're much more than that. But you've hung out with Bobby Brown, drunk tequila with her, which is like one of my personal dreams. Are there any other things that are pinch me moments that you look back on and think, goodness me, like that was pretty bonkers when you really think about it?
Yeah, most definitely. And I say sad. The sad thing is there are lots of those moments that I can't share because I'm under NDA. But
how long for?
Almost eternally.
Oh really?
My dad's a solicitor. I remember I got him to check out my NDA and he was like, yeah, this is the tightest of contracts I've ever seen. But that's kind of wonderful because it's kind of like a little family secret and it's great. And then, you know, there are other moments where, you know, I get a text message or WhatsApp from a photographer friend who's on a job in Hong Kong and they're like, mate, your face is on the side of a bus. Ka-ching.
Pardon?
And that was with Bobby Brown's Pretty Powerful book. That
oh
was a like,
gosh,
what the heck is my face doing on a freaking bus in Hong Kong? Shows what I know about model rights. Sure, take it. Take it all.
I need your dad to sort out your usage rights.
And then I was on an NBC showreel once, I think, for the same thing. And, you know, moments at work where, you know, I looked after Alexandra Shulman for the last kind of 7 years of her time at Vogue. And we were in situations together where I was like, what? Who is that now? Who am I chatting with now? I remember one time, nothing to do with Alex, actually, but I was at Burberry looking on after, I never knew how to say her name, Angela Ernst, who was CEO at one point.
I'm not that cool.
And I was just doing her face, and, you know, in walks Christopher Bailey with Alexa, and I'm just a bit like, you know, I once shouted after Jean-Paul Gaultier, because he was heading off to the wrong loo, and Nicola, what was her name? Nicola at Vogue, Nicola Thornton?
Moulton,
thank you. Was standing right there, and I was kind of like, oh, Jean-Paul, because he was going into the wrong loo, and she just creased up and, like, you know, was doubled over laughing at me, and I was like, what was I meant to do? Let him go into the ladies? Like, what's going on? Yeah, funny. I've got a fun video actually for Bear for his 18th of Kate Upton in her underwear.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Holding
Hey
him.
Bear. Yeah, I know, right? I'm like, yes, I'm going to get my mum points there.
My goodness.
Yeah.
I met Jean-Paul Gaultier a few years ago.
Such a laugh.
Oh my God, amazing.
Lovely guy.
And his fragrance, the original fragrance, because of the bottle.
Hello, classic.
Was my, like...
Mate, I've still got 3 bottles of it upstairs. It's kind of my signature, I'd say. I'm still into the sickly sweet zone.
Well, I haven't worn it for years, but must have been when I was a young teenager. And my parents used to go away with my dad's work quite a lot. And so every time they went through the airport, I was like, could you get me the new
one? Yes!
And there'd be the limited edition bottles, like the fishnet
butterfly
one.
Yeah, yes. I had that one.
Yes.
I've got the new, I don't know if it's limited or not, but it's kind of more of a slightly like Gaga bustier.
Oh yeah, no, I'm down with that.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, when I think about like the kid who would expectantly wait for my parents to come back from the airport hoping that they had like the baked bean can, Jean-Paul Gaultier, and then fast forward 15 years and you're at his show and you've got a picture with him.
Bonkers. I had that moment this weekend. I had a message from someone on Instagram. They were like, do you realise you're a clue in the Telegraph crossword?
Be quiet.
And the clue was... something used by artists like Charlotte Tilbury, Hannah Martin and Lisa Eldridge, for example. Honestly, I nearly peed my pants right then. Crazy.
Oh,
and that was like, my dad reads the Telegraph, might just have to send you a quick WhatsApp. Check it out.
That is insane.
It was funny. It was so funny.
Oh my God.
It's insane. Closet Peter Andre nut.
Oh, Peter.
Oh, I love him. I used to, every time he was on the cover of OK, I was like, yeah, I'm buying that.
Got a great picture of me and him in my home, actually.
Have you?
Me,
stop it.
Grabbing his pec.
Stop it.
And him
I
looking
am
really
jealous.
Offended. And he wasn't. He was totally in that, I promise, listeners. I'm like so going, oh, matron.
What a sweet guy,
Peter. He was very charming. He met me because I covered his wedding.
Which I have...
Yeah,
I told you, my sister made me a wedding book and cut out loads of pictures from their wedding.
And so when I first started working with him and them, I had train track braces.
Okay.
And he could never remember my name. And so for years afterwards, and I'm sure if I saw him now, maybe not now because it's been quite a long time, but he would say, oh, those braces really paid off. Oh, your teeth look great.
Thanks mate.
Because he put me into context in terms of the girl with braces. Mm. Oh, your teeth look fantastic.
Sweet guy. That was kind of slightly more Kiwi, wasn't it, though, babes? Fantastic.
Fantastic. Oh, I don't know. I'm just... It's been years since I've had to do my Peter Andre accent. Anyway.
God, love that boy. And his abs.
Oh, yeah. Well,
he's aged so well, don't you think? Sorry, I'm going off on a, like, Peter Andre tangent. I'm not a closet diehard fan. I just really...
probably has help.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, no judgment.
I fell down a rabbit hole of an Instagram account just at the weekend when you say has help. Oh my goodness. The stuff that people do. I was watching videos of people having filler. No, just filler. And watching how these injectables were like chiseling male and female faces, something extraordinary. There was one guy, like a good looking bearded guy, but they put some filler in, like, you know, his jawbone, and my goodness, he went like way up in the kind of attractive states. Who decides that a broad jaw is attractive, by the way?
Oh, that's like men finding women with big boobs and small waist and big hips.
Yeah.
That's like just genetically, like big jaw must mean like provider or something.
Do you think?
I don't know.
But yeah, it was absolutely fascinating. Segue? Sedgway.
I feel like whether we realise it or not, this podcast really has been fueled by the Pink Fizz in the best way. But I know that I have to let you go soon because you've got to go and get
my nails soaked off,
and I've got to go home and do some work.
Don't go.
No,
stay.
I'm coming here every single day.
Oh, please.
Because listeners, not only did she do the goat's cheese and red onion tarts with a salad and bloomer. Thank you very much.
You didn't eat any of the bloomer. Did you know that I had a carb moment? In like unspoken. I was like, Emma's not eating bread. Sugar, I shouldn't eat my bread. Isn't it weird how we do that?
Oh,
it's like when you're at a party really and there's a massive bowl of chips and you're like, oh my gosh, I want the chips, but no one else has the chips, so you don't have the chips.
Can I be really honest why I didn't have the bread?
Tell me.
Well, partly because the rest of it was delicious, but also because I get embarrassed about how much butter I want to put on the bread.
Oh, mate, you can slice it in this house. No need to spread. Just whack it on like a piece of cheese and you're good to go.
I just didn't want to embarrass myself. You'd be like on a WhatsApp group to loads of other beauty people later. Emma Guns came round to my house. You wouldn't believe the amount of butter.
Oh my goodness.
She had.
No, if anything, I'd text my friend Rach to be like, yes!
One of us.
She's real.
But also she's made cookies, people, and the cookies are now waiting for us to quickly munch
they
before we go to the nail bar and the station.
Very good.
Hannah, would you come back all the time?
Thanks. Oh, I'd love to. I feel kind of like we've scratched the surface.
I do as well.
Sorry about that.
No, because we spoke for a good 90 minutes before we did this.
And we did.
Into our recording time. Because it was just...
Apologies.
You met me at the underpass.
I did.
And within 500 metres, we were talking about therapy sessions. And I was just bearing my soul and you were too. So it's just like a meeting of the brilliant minds and hearts.
Love that.
Thank you for coming on. Please come back soon.
I'd love to.
Thank you. Are there links to you, all of your endeavours? Will be in the show notes.
Oh, great. Thank you.
So, thanks for coming on and for talking about, because I do think it's really interesting. Mm. It's a really, transition can be very uncertain. And I hope that what this has done for some listeners is reassure them.
Yeah.
That actually making changes is good.
Yeah. Don't do something just because you're afraid. Sometimes that's a really good thing. Mm. Fear is a great driver.
I can't believe I finished that off with okie doke. But there we go, I
love
did.
Love it.
Right, peace out. I thank you so much for your time. And before you go, I just want to remind you that if you do want to get in touch with me, it's very, very simple. Just email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com. That's an inbox for listeners only. I respond to all of the messages personally. Might not always be promptly, but I do respond to them personally. If you feel more comfortable sending me a DM on social media, I'm at Emma Guns on Instagram and Twitter. And you can also, if you want to have a conversation with me and fellow listeners of the podcast, join the Facebook group, which can be, where can you find it? I know where you can find it, by clicking the link in the show notes, which can be found wherever you are streaming and downloading this episode of the podcast. Also, that's the place where you might be able to find the option to leave a 5-star review and maybe a couple of sentences about what you like. And it really does help self-published podcasts like mine stand out on huge, massive platforms if you have any nice words to say. So thank you so much. It's been a delight to spend this time with you, and I cannot wait to see you on the next one.